Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Welcome to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. I'm Joe Bender, and it's just great to have you here this afternoon. It's a beautiful Friday here in the Midwest, and looking forward to just a spectacular weekend. Well, let me ask you a question today. What is your definition of success? Is it a thriving career or maybe a perfect family? Is it a new home and a thriving community? And what would happen if that idea of your success kind of got turned on its head? Would that change the way that you feel about yourself, maybe the way that you feel about God? And how might you get back to a thriving relationship with him? Well, my guest for today has experienced the highs and lows of maybe changing her idea of what it means to be successful. Let me tell you a little bit about her, and we will get her on the show. Shannon Martin is my guest today. She is known for her popular blog, Shannon Martin Writes. It used to be called Flower Patch Farm Girl, if you are familiar with that. She's a speaker and a writer who found her voice in the country, and she found her story in the city. We'll talk about that and more. She's got a jail chaplain as a husband. Corey and she have four funny children who came to them from across oceans and rivers. Having sold their dream farmhouse, they now enjoy a neighborhood in Goshen, Indiana. Shannon, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Joe. It's good to be here.
Well, it's been fun to read your book because I think people will find themselves kind of nodding along as you talked about the opening of you had this idea of what your life was going to be like. So tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. You know, I think like so many people I know, my husband, Corey, and myself, we both grew up in small town, Midwestern communities. We both grew up raised in the church from the time, you know, for our entire lives, we were raised in the church. We had very peaceful and lovely childhoods. And when we got married and started our life together, we had this ideal of what it meant to sort of live the good life, and in particular, what it meant to live the good Christian life. We believed that, you know, we always knew that our faith was going to be important to us. We would be involved in our church. We would be teaching scriptures to our kids and, you know, praying together, and all of those things would be central to our life. But we, first and foremost, had this idea of success that was going to mean finding a life for ourselves that was as comfortable and safe and secure and stable as possible. We believed that financial stability was one of our top priorities. We set out to find that life. So, you know, we were searching for solid careers. We were searching for a good, solid bank balance. We were looking towards security in the future, whatever, you know, we were so young. We're still pretty young, but we had this ideal of what it was going to mean to set ourselves up for success. And honestly, a lot of it had to do with finances and the perception of safety.
Well, and it's so funny as you wrote about that, I thought that is true. Even in having those discussions when you're in college of what is your career going to be or where are you going to go to college? What will that lead to? That we all aspired to this kind of comfortable life. Well, if we can make our life easy, then that is going to be the best way to do it. And it sounds like you had that as well.
Absolutely. You know, and I think we take it a step further where it's not necessarily that we expect life to be simple, but, you know, we were very good, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps Midwesterners. You know, we assumed that it was going to require a lot of hard work. But I think at the end of the day, our problem began when we believed that we could decide, when we believed that our plan for ourselves was going to kind of be, you know, God would be along for the ride with us. So we set out to achieve our plans and to achieve our ideas of success. We were essentially looking for the American dream with a side of Jesus.
Well, and you and your husband were both very successful at achieving your dream and your idea of success. Tell me where you were at when things started to change a little bit.
Sure. When things started to change for us, we had not long before, a couple of years before, moved from Washington, D.C. back to Indiana, which is where we had originally started out. That's where my husband is from. And so we kind of moved back home from the big city of D.C. We both had successful jobs in federal politics at that time. So my husband worked for a United States congressman, and he was promoted to a position back in the district office. So that's what kind of led to our move back to Indiana. And I continued working out of our home from the job that I had in Washington, D.C. as well. I worked at the Heritage Foundation at the time doing policy analysis and writing and researching and those kinds of things. So we moved back. We had not started our family yet. We eventually were handed the gift of infertility, which was a huge surprise to us. It was not, you know, part of our master plan. That was one of the first moments when we kind of were jarred into realizing that life was going to take some unexpected turns for us, and that honestly we didn't have as much control as we thought we did. But it was a wonderful gift. And so, you know, we had these two beautiful, precious small kids. We ended up buying our dream farmhouse out on 6 acres, kind of in the middle of nowhere, close enough for Corey to get to his job and those kinds of things. But we were really setting ourselves up to have that picture perfect life. You know, we were kind of at the beginning, and so we felt like, you know, we spent those years kind of building ourselves up and putting everything into place, and now here we were. This is the life that we had always wanted.
Well, and in your story just about how you went through the process of adoption, I mean, it seemed like, hey, we're going to get through this hurdle of infertility okay, and we're still going to be fine with all the things that we planned. Is that kind of where you were at?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think anybody that faces infertility, it has a lot of loss that comes along with it. But Corey and I particularly have this kind of attitude of like, well, okay, let's see, you know, this is a surprise to us, but let's just roll with it. Let's dive in. Let's tackle this. Let's move forward. And that was kind of our perspective then. We just wanted a family. And so that was a moment of clarity for us in understanding, you know, we thought our kids were going to look like us. We had this picture in our mind once again. But at the, you know, ultimately we just wanted a family. It didn't matter to us where our kids came from. And so we just jumped in with both feet, and we started building our family. And, you know, our son Calvin came home from South Korea, and then a little less than a year later, our daughter was born through a domestic adoption. And there we were. You know, we were this picture-perfect, successful. We had good reputations. We were just seen as this young family that was kind of getting it right. You know, there was this sense of, you know, here is a good Christian family. This is what we should be aspiring to. And we were kind of there.
So what was it that happened next where you began to realize, uh-oh, here we go. Life is going to look a little bit different. God has something very unexpected planned for us.
Yeah, you know, I think God most often speaks the loudest in the quietest and smallest moments. That's my journey, and that tends to be how things go down in my life. And so it's funny to me to talk about this because it was such a small moment, but it had such a big impact, and we're still feeling the ripple effects. We sat down one evening, Corey and I did, after Ruby and Calvin had gone to bed, and Corey's brother had recommended that we listen to this particular sermon online. And this was, you know, quite a few years ago. And so we sat down, we'd never done anything like that before, and we sat down and we listened to a sermon series that ended up being written into the book Radical by David Platt. And it was a long sermon series, and we sat there that first night, and we listened together, and then we just kind of quietly walked into bed. And both of us just had this really tangible and immediate feeling that God is at work. The Holy Spirit is at work, and we don't know what's happening. We're a little bit scared. But that was the starting point of a tremendous shifting in our life and in our hearts and in our world.
Well, we're going to hear more from Shannon Martin when we come back. We have to take a really short break. Shannon has outlined her story and, of course, a bunch of inspiration in her book called Falling Free, Rescued from the Life I Always Wanted. We'd love to get that book in your hands. Her publisher and Shannon have both been so generous to donate a few copies. And you can give us a call if you'd like to get one of those, 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Carissa will take your name and we'll do a drawing at the end of the show. We'll be right back with Shannon Martin.
Breathe,
Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Pleased to have Shannon Martin with me today. She has written a very intriguing book called Falling Free, Rescued from the Life I Always Wanted. And Shannon, as long as we set that up so nicely with some Tom Petty, you explain what it means, what the title of your book means, Falling Free. Can you talk a little bit about that, how you came up with that title?
Sure. You know, titling a book is always interesting. It's quite a journey. But to me, the story of my life is that for my family, we came to see that our God's more for us was going to look like less. So every step of the way, you know, we talked earlier about this culture that we were very much wrapped up in that, you know, every step that you take has to be a step up. And that's the life that we were living until everything changed. And then it seemed like, you know, day after day and month after month, we were just falling and falling and losing and surrendering, and things were being stripped from us. And as every one of those things was stripped away, we found more freedom. You know, every step back off of the ladder, every time we chose to just kind of fall, you know, deeper towards the earth and more entrenched in the world around us, we found the freedom of living the life that God planned for us and being rescued from the life we thought we wanted.
Isn't that so different than what goes on in our heads? So many people will say, well, I'll get to that right after I get to here, you know, right after I step up to that next place. I'll volunteer right after God lays this on my heart, or I'll tithe as soon as I can afford to, or I'll change jobs or adopt that child, you know, once it's convenient for me. And your life seems to be very contradictory to that.
Yeah, you know, at this point, it's kind of the only way I know to live. And it took a lot of time to get me to this place. I mean, that early season of change for us, and, you know, when we realized God was asking us to surrender our dream home, that was a really hard thing for me. I mean, remember, my blog at that point was called Flower Patch Farm Girl. And now, you know, I come to see that I'm being led to move into this raggedy, kind of rough neighborhood on the wrong side of the tracks, and nothing seemed to make sense. You know, we thought we were living the good life. We thought we were doing what God would want from us. And to realize that we had gotten all of that wrong really rocked us. I mean, it shook us for a very long time. But yeah, I mean, it's so upside down, and it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. But that's where Corey and I are beginning to see, when things look weird to the world around us, when people don't understand what we're doing, when we get a lot of curious looks and a lot of skepticism thrown our way, that's when we tend to know that we're kind of in that sweet spot of where the Lord wants us. Because, you know, you look at the life of Jesus, everything he did subverted the common culture. Everything he did kind of flew in its face and flipped it on its head. And, you know, I think that is very much the life that each one of us is called to. We're not called to live life in the way that's most culturally acceptable or relevant. We're called to this weird way of Jesus where, you know, we're the most free when we're the closest to street level.
So back up a little bit and tell me what happened that you're in this farmhouse, you're kind of living the dream, you've got these two kids. What happened that caused you to have to make a move or think about making a move to a different part of the area?
Sure. You know, every step of the way, as God started stirring inside our hearts, I kept saying to Corey, I think we are supposed to sell our house. And, you know, I was crying a lot and very emotional during that time. And Corey was as calm as ever and would always say, oh, no, you know, that's settle down. It's going to be okay. We, in the midst of all of that, flew to South Korea and brought home our third little baby. And so we brought Silas home. He was a heartbroken little baby. It was a really rough transition for all of us. And a month after that, my job unexpectedly came to an end. I worked on a government contract that just was cut sort of from the budget. And then a month after that, my husband's job very, very unexpectedly ended when the congressman he worked for resigned suddenly. And so there we were. You know, we have now three kids. We've already felt like God is maybe nudging us to surrender this farmhouse. Now we've both lost our jobs. You know, things were getting painfully clear during that time. And, you know, of course, Corey found another job and I was taking care of the kiddos. And, you know, we could have made it work, But there was just a pretty strong sense in both of us at that point that he was, in fact, the Lord was calling us to a place where we would live closer to lives that were different than ours. We had the sense that we had to come out from under the bubble. You know, we were living this safe and comfortable and peaceful, long lane life. And we just knew we were becoming kind of desperate for the mess of the gospel. You know, we were reading it with fresh eyes and seeing it in a new way, and we wanted some of that. We wanted to understand what it looked like to love the poor and to care for the orphan and to, you know, defend the marginalized. And so we knew we were going to have to, for us, we were going to have to move.
So when you decided that this is what you were going to do, were there people who were questioning your move along the way? And what did that do to your faith?
Yeah, there were people that were questioning our sanity. we had a lot of skepticism, a lot of doubters, a lot of concern, you know, from people who loved us and who loved our kids and who were finding it very hard to understand or to believe that God would ever ask us to lay this stuff down. And I mean, honestly, it was a tough time for us because it took 18 months for our farm to sell. So for 18 months, we had these voices in our ear of saying, you know, surely not. Surely you guys must be hearing this wrong. But Corey and I would come together. It was really kind of a unifying moment for us in our marriage. We had gone through some rocky times early in our marriage, and we had come through them. But this was a different thing. I mean, I just felt like this pulled us together in a brand new way where we were able to say, it doesn't matter if nobody around us understands this. It doesn't matter if people don't even necessarily support this. We know that we are hearing from the Lord on this, and that's enough. It's enough for the two of us to hear. But I will say that going through that experience has made me more passionate than ever to really support the weird stuff that the people around me are being called to, because I think that's so often the way God moves. I mean, I think he wants us to live in kind of this weird and startling way. He wants us to live at the end and the edge of ourselves so that he can really sweep in and take over.
Hmm. So how did you see him sweeping in and taking over when your husband's job changed?
My husband ended up working at an alternative high school for a little while. And during that time, he worked there for a couple of years, kind of in the interim as an administrator. God swept into our world through that experience by leading us to who would become our fourth child. So Robert and Corey met at the alternative school. And then a few years later, he officially became part of our family. After Corey worked at the alternative school, he very unexpectedly became the full-time chaplain of our county jail. And this was something, to say the least, none of us saw this coming. This was never part of our plan. Every step of the way, you know, God only ever showed us the very next step. So he never unfurled the blueprints of our future and sort of showed us this master plan. It was always just do this next thing, and you don't know why, and you don't know where you're going, and you don't know how it's going to be received, but do this one thing. And every step of the way, you know, life got weirder and more chaotic and more thrilling, and you know, we had to depend more and more and more on the grace and the glory of God to get us through. And so that was, you know, with each of those transitions and the job changes and all of those, we saw the love of God graciously poured out on us because every step of the way we were connected with people around us who just made our life better.
You know, I think there are some people who are just have this predisposition where they're comfortable with being in that place where you only know one step ahead. And I seem to be a person that likes the big blueprint. And did you find that both you and your husband were along that same journey, or were you able to support and kind of build each other up if one of you wasn't?
You know, that's God's grace to us too, because we really along this journey have very much walked in step. And we've been very much side by side on this. We certainly have our bad days and our bad moments. I mean, there were times just before we moved when I realized the school district we were moving our kids into, my precious kindergartner and my second grader were being switched from one of the best school systems in the state of Indiana to a school that at the time was a failing school. I mean, you could see the tire marks as I slammed on the brakes. I mean, that was a moment for me of just tremendous fear and, you know, feeling like, okay, everybody was right. We have lost our minds. We're going to ruin our kids' lives. I mean, all of the fear moved into the room. And, you know, when we have those moments, there's always, you know, Corey, it tends to be me being fearful, and Corey's the one saying it's going to be okay, and, you know, just kind of pointing me back to the truth of the gospel and the truth that we've been called to. So, yeah, there's some of that push and pull for sure.
Mm. Well, and it does seem like that could create some tension, and it sounds like in your family, I mean, even with your kids, kids have a much better idea of how to be resilient than it seems like we do yeah. as parents, because I find myself feeling so deeply for my children that sometimes yeah. it rocks me even more than it would if it were just something that was happening to me.
Yeah. You know, that's what I was feeling is we had this moment, and I wrote about it in the book. But we had this clear moment where I got a really clear picture of what we were walking into. We were visiting our neighborhood that we would be moving into. And, you know, the circumstances of that moment led me to just feel like, how can I do this? I mean, as a parent, we want to, there's part of us that naturally wants to protect our kids. But, you know, it's hard to wrap your mind around the fact that if we're being called into this kind of life of adventure, our kids are being called too. They're not just along for the ride. They're being called to, God loves them more than I do, which is really hard to comprehend. But we can trust that, and we can trust that though our kids might be exposed to things that they may not have been exposed to back our long lane out in the middle of nowhere, I believe that none of this is wasted. And I see the way God is shaping them and, you know, working in their little hearts and training them up to be people that are not going to be afraid of others who are different than they are. And it's just such a beautiful thing to watch that happening.
So you had mentioned earlier that you thought people were maybe looking at you saying, hey, this is just the perfect Christian family. Did your idea for that change of what it meant to be a perfect Christian family?
Absolutely. I mean, I think each of us is called to surrender. I think a life in Christ has to cost us something. And especially right now, I mean, I think the world is just taking a look around at the Christians and saying, what is your faith costing you? I think it's imperative. It has to happen. And I think that's going to look different for everybody. And I think maybe in some ways, the way that it looks in my family is a little more extreme than it might look for some. But I think for me, what it means to follow Christ is that he gets to make the plans, he gets to provide what we need, he gets to set our standard for what we need and how much is enough. You know, he gets to kind of take control of my day and take control of my plans and my agenda, and it's a constant work in process. I mean, we are introverted people. We live in a community now where people are knocking on our door all the time, and it's still a struggle for me. We've lived here for quite a few years. I love my place. I love it deeply. But there are just those days where you just want nobody to, you don't want anybody to knock on the door. You don't want to go outside. You don't want to do those things.
Shannon, we're going to take a quick break, but we're going to come back, hear more from Shannon Martin and her book, Falling Free. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Just grateful to have you here today. I have Shannon Martin on today. She is an author and writer. She found her voice in the country and her story in the city. We've heard a little bit about that in the first half of the show. She and her jail chaplain husband, Corey, have four funny children who came to them in very different ways, some across oceans, some across rivers. Having sold their dream farmhouse, Shannon now enjoys a neighborhood life in Goshen, Indiana. So, Shannon, tell me a little bit more about your fourth child and how he came to be part of your family.
Oh, Robert. I could say so many things about Robert. He has been just the surprise of a lifetime. As I mentioned, he and Corey met when Corey worked at an alternative high school, which is essentially a school for kids who, for whatever reason, don't thrive in a typical school setting. So a lot of them come from pretty troubled backgrounds. They struggle through traditional school for a lot of different reasons. And he became an important part of our life then, and that's when we were back on the farm. Then we lost track of him for a little while. He was always getting kicked out of the alternative school and had some bumps along the road there. And he disappeared for a little while, and he reemerged and in time to tell us that he was having twin sons. And a few months after those sons were born, he was arrested and sent to jail. So when Robert officially came into our family, he was 19 years old, and he was serving time in prison. When he was released from prison, he was released to our care and moved into our home here in the city with his ankle monitor and his cigarette behind his ear. And, you know, life was taking just another really unexpected turn. And he's just wonderful. He's just a wonderful young man. He's 23 now, and he's working hard, and we just love him so much.
So Robert was an addition that that you probably weren't planning as you were planning out your life. And the other thing I found really interesting is just Corey being this chaplain in the county jail. That wasn't really on your master plan either. But now your husband's ministering, and part of his daily life is walking alongside people who are really in incredible pain. How did that change your family life?
You know, when Robert was in jail, that was our first, for Corey and myself, that was our first visit to a jail ever. And so that's, you know, in a strange kind of way, Robert led Corey into that work and into his mission and his ministry, which is a really cool thing to see how God orchestrated all of that. But, you know, he's been the full-time chaplain of that jail now for several years. And like you said, I mean, our life has become, because of where we live and because of the work Corey does, you know, we are surrounded by people who suffer through poverty, who suffer through deep addiction, who suffer through fractured families, and just on and on it goes. I mean, those are our people now. Those are primarily the people that we spend our time with, the people that are in and out of our home constantly, the people who are sitting around our table and hanging out on our couch. And I mean, those are our people. And it's such a dramatic shift from the life we came from, where we almost exclusively spent time with people who looked and lived and believed exactly the way we did. This is a huge shift. And, you know, spending time with people who are suffering will, for one thing, cause you to suffer. I mean, I think that's a gift that we get to suffer with the suffering. And, you know, but there's real sadness. There's real emotion there. On the flip side, it's just our biggest joy to get to walk alongside these friends of ours who are struggling and working and surviving in many ways like we are. I mean, we at every turn see ourselves in them. We see our pain in them. We see that we all kind of want the same things. We see God at work in our lives. We see how much we really have in common.
Well, and it does kind of cause you to reevaluate that idea that you may have had for what a good life was, to have more, to be able to do more. And now it looks like it's flipped a little bit, that God encourages us that we need to love more and support more. And as we do those things, we realize how precious that is.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the journey. You know, I think that's the whole point of this long life that we have on earth. So many times we think of life as being so short. And I just think over and over again that it's pretty long. So I don't want to waste it. I don't want to waste these long years that I have on the focusing on the wrong things or wanting the wrong things. I think I spent my first 3.5 decades wanting the wrong things. And so now, you know, we get a taste of like the bittersweet of the abundant life where we get to taste all of it. We get the sadness and we get the joy and we get the pain and we get the redemption and the triumph. And this is the good life. This is the life that we did not know that we wanted. And this is it. We're finding it. We're finding it every step of the way.
And yet, it's not to throw away the comfortable life either. God can and does amazing things within the lives of people who have a very comfortable life, doesn't he?
Well, and let me be clear, my life is extremely comfortable in many ways. You know, that's something I'm faced with constantly. I still have far more than I need. I am still far more comfortable than most of our neighbors are. that's a reality that I cannot escape now, and it causes a lot of tension within me, and I think that's an important tension to feel. So I don't think it's so much about the stuff, you know? I mean, I think we're all somewhere kind of on that spectrum. I think the point is to hold what we have really loosely. And, you know, it means holding our finances loosely and holding our home loosely. I mean, when we moved into our home, we just knew that we were going to have to make, you know, roll out the welcome mat to anybody who wanted to step inside. And we were going to, if we said we, you know, people could come just as they are, then we were going to have to mean it. And if we wanted people to come in just as they are, we were going to have to arrive just as we are and not constantly trying to make ourselves, you know, polished and pretty and perfect, but just here we are in our mess, come on in.
Hmm. Well, and you write about that really eloquently in a couple different chapters. One you call Get Risky. And so I'd love for you to explain a little bit about that when you would get to the point where you're feeling like, okay, I can relax a little bit, then you knew that was a time for you to get risky again. Talk more about that.
Right. I'm always feeling that. When things settle down a little bit, I'm always kind of looking over my shoulder like, what am I maybe missing right now? How am I not paying attention? And I don't think that's particularly good theology, let me just say that. But, you know, this is where life has brought us, that we're always kind of looking. I think when we pay attention, I don't think God is about constantly keeping us in upheaval. But I think when we're paying attention to the world around us, there are people around us who need love. Like you said earlier, it's got to be about that love. It's got to be about committing to each other no matter what. And it's got to be about accepting each other no matter what. You know, we didn't come here to plant a church or to start a food bank or to fix anybody. We came here to just live as ordinary neighbors. But if some of that was going to involve some risk along the way, I think that's the life that Christ lived. He didn't live a safe and sanitized and, you know, particularly comfortable life. He was always with his toes to the edge of risk. And I think that's where more of us need to kind of inch towards, even if we're nervous. You know, we did a lot of these things kind of scared. And that's when God gets to come in and be our comfort and be our courage.
You know, you've had such a positive experience. I mean, I know by reading your book, there have been some challenges along the way, but you've had such a positive experience kind of taking that suburban Christian into maybe an urban core. We have someone who just sent in a question that said, you know, a lot of cities have this urban core that seems kind of overwhelmed by needs. What might you suggest to someone who's listening today who knows they should do something but is not really sure what they should do?
The biggest advice I have to offer for every single person listening, including Shannon Martin, is to pay attention, to be really attuned to your place. And I think we can go about this in the simplest ways. You know, one of the ways that I've come to really pay attention to my place is by committing to walking my younger kids to school every day. It's such a small, small thing, but I retrace those same steps day in and day out. And as I do that over and over and over again, I just become more aware of my place and more aware of my people. You know, I don't live in an urban jungle by any means. I live in just a really ordinary, neglected neighborhood. Mm-hmm. But if I can come to love this neighborhood, then I'm going to more deeply love its people. And when we love people, it is amazing what we are willing to do. And it's amazing what we're willing to sacrifice for them, because that's what love does. You know, love sacrifices. So wherever you are, you know, start looking around. Pray for God to allow you to see people the way he sees them. And that changes everything.
Well, and just to take that step, I mean, it seems like sometimes we may be nudged by something we hear in a sermon or read or just hear on the radio, and then we're not really sure what to do with that. What do you do when you feel that kind of a nudge, like God is moving you again?
I try, and I'm not always good at it, and I don't always get it right, but I'm trying. You know, God in his faithfulness has shown me that if I take that step of obedience, whether I feel nervous or not, that he's going to meet me in that place. I think a lot of times, myself included, Christians tend to think that if we feel hesitation, if we feel nervous, if we feel scared, then that's a sign that we're not supposed to do it. You know, we talk about like, well, I don't have peace about it. Well, let me tell you, there have been a lot of the things that have happened in my life that I have not particularly felt peace about. But I think, you know, and I don't think God speaks to us through fear. I don't think that's part of God's character. So we feel fear because we're humans. And I think God understands that. But we get to take that to him and say, listen, we know you're asking us to do this thing. I'm kind of scared, but we trust you. We have seen you provide. We have seen you carry us through this. We're going to continue following after you, but you're going to have to do something to settle me down along the way. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's just about doing things scared sometimes.
You know, I try to tell my kids as they get into this fear when they're trying to do something new that you never know what you're able to do until you try something that you didn't think you were able to do. And then all of a sudden it blossoms, and then you get to do something a little bit more challenging the next time. And I feel like God works that way with us sometimes as well. Like that first little nudge might be something that isn't quite so difficult, but they get stronger, don't they?
They do. And that's how God builds our faith. You know, that's where I think it's really hard to have our faith built when we are solving all of our problems ourselves, which that's the life I came out of. You know, there's a verse in the Bible that says, woe to you who warms himself by the light of his own fire. And I think of that verse all the time because we still fall into the trap of warming ourselves by our own fires. I mean, we would much rather take care of business ourselves. It's harder to be in a place of dependence and reliance. But as we do those things, our faith is built and we see the way God carries us. You know, my youngest son was at the dentist not long ago and he was very nervous. And the sweet dental hygienist said to him, it's good that you're scared because then at the end you can say that you were brave.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, yes, that's it. That's it.
That is so true. I think I'm going to steal that line from your hygienist. Don't tell her,
you
but
should.
That is an excellent line.
You won't mind.
You know, I'd love if you'd talk a little bit just about your blog and how you connect with other people. It just seems like women are in such need to know that there's people out there who are thinking and feeling the same way they are. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I started blogging, you know, 9 years ago, I think, at this point. And so I've been blogging consistently since then. And, you know, as you mentioned, my blog is now ShannonMartinWrites.com. I also stay pretty connected to people on Facebook, and particularly I'm probably the most active on Instagram. So on Instagram, I'm Shannon Writes, and Shannon is S-H-A-N-N-A-N. But particularly on Instagram, I try to document my walk to school most days, because that's where I kind of find that I have a moment, this quiet little moment with God, and kind of redirecting my attention and focusing on him, focusing on the world around me. It's just become a really precious thing to me. So that's something that people seem to really enjoy following along with too. But I agree. I mean, we just need each other. We're better together. And I love connecting with people who care about these things or who are curious or, you know, who are wanting to kind of feel some of the mess of the gospel as well.
Well, Shannon, it's just been a joy to spend this hour with you. Thanks so much for your book. Shannon's book is called Falling Free, Rescued from the Life I Always Wanted. And again, we do have a few copies to get away. If you'd like to get on that list, just give us a call at 877-933-2484. And we will have information about Shannon on our website at myfaithradio.com. Just click on Connecting Faith. You'll be able to find her there. And Shannon, best of luck as you just continue to pursue God's plan for your life.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for joining us for Connecting Faith. We had a great conversation with Shannon Martin. If you want to see or hear more about our conversation, you can head to myfaithradio.com, click on Connecting Faith, and there'll be a podcast of our conversation. Now we catch up with Robia Scott. A couple of months ago, I was able to talk to Robia about some changes that she was making in her life as well. And in this next clip, we'll hear about her decision to leave behind a thriving career in Hollywood for full-time ministry.
I had achieved at a very young age what people dream their whole lives to achieve. So, you know, in my early 20s, I had sort of arrived. You know, I was on television. I was traveling the world. I was making a good living financially. But I was definitely struggling with some things internally. And, you know, I've always believed in God. I've always been a seeker of deeper things. And I think because I was really struggling, you know, I was chain smoking. I had all sorts of issues with body image and my weight, which I think most women struggle with. But then being a dancer and an actress just really exaggerated that. So I was really just tormented inside of myself. And, you know, interestingly, whenever I talk about weight issues or body image issues, people always say, oh, well, you know, is there a time where you were overweight? And I kind of forget that people would maybe think that. So I was never overweight. I was always, my whole life, I've been very thin and very fit. So you couldn't really see what I was dealing with on the outside, but internally I was just completely consumed with dieting or binging and purging, or, you know, what I would eat in a day, what I would not eat, how I looked. I was just living in bondage. And so because of that, it really drove me to seek answers. And I grew up in Southern California, and when you're seeking help and growth and God, usually you really kind of bump into the New Age movement because that's so prevalent in that area. So I started doing all of that. I was meditating and doing yoga and reading self-help books. And it was kind of funny. Years later, you know, God kind of spoke to me in my spirit, and he said, you know, I kind of got a revelation that self-help is a little bit of a oxymoron, because it was really myself that was the problem. And with self-help, you're looking to yourself to get out of the problem. But if myself knew what the heck it was doing, I would have been, you know, I would have been in bondage in the first place. So, I started to realize that, you know, I needed something greater than myself. And there's even a wonderful quote that I came upon that Einstein said. He said, "No problem can be solved by the same level of consciousness that created it."
So you've written this book that's called Counterfeit Comforts, Freedom from the Imposters That Keep You from True Peace, Purpose, and Passion. And I just love that you said, well, goodness, if we knew how to do that, then we wouldn't be in the mess we were in. So when did you come to the point where you started learning a little bit about who this Jesus Christ person was? And you had a great story, a couple of great stories that I loved, but why don't you just tell the story of how you first came to know who Jesus Christ was?
Okay, well, you know, because like I shared, I was doing the New Age type of spiritual practice, but I wasn't getting free. You know, I was in Hollywood, I was successful, I was doing all of those things that are supposed to give you, you know, all the peace and joy in the world, but I didn't have all the peace and the joy in the world. So I was still searching, I was still open, and I had some people talk to me about Christianity. And because I was searching, I was open to it, but I have to be honest and say that I didn't really see a lot of representations of Christianity that I connected with. I didn't, you know, I'd seen like Christian television, and I wasn't sure about that. And you know, I just wasn't sure that there could only be one way to God. And I wasn't sure what being a born-again Christian meant. You know, once I got born again, did it mean I had to like sell everything and move to Africa? And, you know, did I have to be really conservative? Like, you know, what did it mean? And one of the things that I was really just seeking some answers. So I think there's a couple stories that you mentioned. The first thing was, I said, okay, God, I was in my car one day and I said, all right, God, look, you know, I believe in you. I'm open to the truth. If there really is something to Jesus, then just make it clear to me. Give me a sign. Give me something, and I will investigate further. I'll look at the Bible, because here I was reading every God type of book there was, every spiritual book, but I never actually opened the Bible. So I said, God, you know, help me out here. Give me a sign about Jesus. So I'm in my car driving while I'm praying this, and on the freeway, and all of a sudden I notice that I've got a huge pack of the Hell's Angels bikers around my car. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, how ironic. You know, I'm praying to God and I'm surrounded by Hell's Angels. And they all look really tough. And, you know, they've got the leather jackets on, and I've got a couple bikers in front of me. I've got a few on either side of my car. I'm completely encompassed. So I look, and I've got two bikes in front of me, and, you know, the guys have leather jackets on, and I look a little more closely, and there are big crosses on the back of their jackets. And over the crosses, it says, "We ride for Jesus."
That is hilarious. So, I just started laughing. I mean, I'm like, God has such a good sense of humor.
God has a great sense of humor. And this is what I was learning about God, that you know, he'll talk to us. The Bible says he talks to us in obscure ways, in various ways. And he will talk through a pastor or through a sermon or through his word, but he'll also talk through, you know, a billboard or bikers on the road. You know, he's always trying to talk to us. And that's what's so beautiful. So at that point, I just started laughing. I said, okay, this is really funny. I'm asking for a sign about Jesus, and I've got Jesus bikers all around me. So I was like, you know, Lord, just, you know, keep leading me. I didn't obviously become a Christian in that one second, but I knew that God was taking me down a path. So there was another moment where I just, you know, I had that worldly mindset of what being a Christian meant. And I really felt that I was scared. I was scared to make the decision because I thought that God would want to take everything from me. You know, he'd want to take away my personality. He'd want to take away me having fun. He'd want to take away all the things that I loved and turn me into this kind of cookie cutter version of this born again Christian me. So again, I said, God, you know, help me out. Give me some insight here. And I don't know how this happened, but like I said, God speaks in obscure ways. I was reading some magazine article and it was all about Michelangelo, who is a famous artist, if anyone doesn't know. He painted the Sistine Chapel. He sculpted David, you know, numerous works of art. So I'm reading this article about Michelangelo, and it says that when he went to sculpt, he would stand in front of a huge piece of marble. And instead of trying to create a statue or a work of art, he would actually see the finished masterpiece inside the marble. And all he would do was chip away at the excess that was keeping it from being what it already was. And when I read that, something just went off in my spirit. I felt again like God said, that's who I am. If you will come to me, I'm not going to take anything from you that you love. All I'm going to do is chip away at all the excess, the bondage, the torment, the addiction, the anxiety, the fear. All I'll do is chip away at all that excess that's burdening you and keeping you from being the masterpiece that I've created you to be. That's who I am. You know, I'm not a controlling God. I'm a God who wants to set you free so that you can, you know, you can live in purpose. You can walk in destiny. You can do all of those things. And that, Joe, was a huge turning point for me right then.
Where do you think that comes from, Robia, where that fear that if we come to know God, that we'll have to give up this, the special uniqueness of who we are? Where do you think that comes from?
You know, I think it comes maybe from the media as part of it. I don't see, you know, Christianity or God represented in a way always that's accurate, especially the mainstream media, you know, Hollywood. You know, some of us have situations with our parents or father figures that could be maybe not all that we wanted them to be, so that we kind of impose that, you know, that onto God, that he's going to be harsh or he's going to be, you know, unloving or condemning. I think often religion is portrayed that way, you know, that God is all about you sinner and hellfire and damnation. And when we really actually know the nature of God, you know, what I learned is that that's not God's nature. He's not ever going to shame us or be critical of us. That sometimes there's conviction where he wants to change us, but it's not from a shaming place. It's never, oh, you bad, bad Christian, you know, look at what you're doing bad. Usually it's that conviction of just love, which is, you know, God's not judging us for doing all these bad things, but he wants to help us get out from under, you know, making those choices, because really it's those choices that are keeping us in bondage. And God loves us and wants to set us free.
That was Robia Scott. And again, you can check out a podcast of our conversation as well on our website at myfaithradio.com. Just click on Connecting Faith, and really so many programs available on our website. If you are someone who likes to listen to podcasts via app, we have just a great Faith Radio app as well, and you can have access to any of the programs that air here on Faith Radio. Well, we have just a wonderful fifth annual Faith Radio Writers Contest coming up as well. We are currently accepting submissions from both fiction and nonfiction of themes outlined on Micah 6:8. If you're an aspiring writer, you want to be in that contest, well, you should go to myfaithradio.com as well. And I'm having trouble speaking at the end of my show. So thanks so much for listening today and hope you have a great weekend. Thanks for listening to Connecting Faith.
Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.